Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and we now hold the record for the most cursed podcast on the internet. Maybe if I learn a reverse curse technique, that'll stop things. And with me, I have...
The moral of turning red. You were all cringe at 13. Yes, even you.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm cringe now. And with me, I have...
Well, I mean, that Sonic 2 trailer was wild. I can't believe they had a threesome.
Wait, so it's basically my Sonic fanfiction?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, who am I kidding? I never wrote fanfiction. Yeah. Because I can't read or write.
Okay. I don't know why, but when he's just nothing really said, Echidna warrior. Now, if I'm going to say Echidna warrior, bitch. Gah! And then crack his hand like, oh, you broke my hand. Yeah, that's what you get.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still not going to see that movie because I never saw the first one because, but I don't know. Everyone else can have fun with it, I guess. But, yeah. Anyway, here we are for the actual proper round two of episode 259. Now, since we're on a bit of a deadline today because our co-host here has to tune into a live stream of a certain thing at 9 p.m. because yeah. It is, in fact, a day.
Yes.
Not just any day, the day.
Yeah. That day.
And although I'm good at multitasking, I'm not that good at multitasking, but here's the TLDR of all of us. Rob, your power went out. Mark, your audacity started fucking up. Me, I had food poisoning. But good news, I found a DVD of Sonic Christmas Blast outside of a gas station the other day.
Okay then.
That was the most exciting thing to happen to me all week.
You know, that reminds me, tomorrow on the way back from class, I gotta see if I can stop by a Dollar Tree and find those things that y'all have been fishing for around Dollar Trees. Because apparently there's good hauls to be found there.
All depends on where you look.
But yeah, the power was out for pretty much almost like half the day yesterday. It's at least back now. If you're wondering why the roundup's late, that's why. But now we're going to jump into, of course, our usual business, starting, of course, with the new song discussion for the past week. Of course, there'll be a playlist down in the description so you can follow along with us and pick up some new tunes and anticipate some new albums. And this is a fresh new crop of songs, no recycling from the last episode. We always like to keep things fresh up in here. So, starting up at the top here. So the last time we heard from the Australian Mad Lads in King Gizzard, plus or minus a Lizard Wizard, was June of last year with the dream pop album Butterfly 3000. That was like 9 months ago, man. That's basically an eternity in King Gizzard time. That won't do at all. We need some new material. That shit's old hat. And as such, they have a new album from them called Made in Timeland, which actually came out March 5th. Ha ha! Bet you weren't expecting that twist now, were ya? But anyway, that's not the point of this portion of the podcast. We are here because they also announced another brand new album that does not have a release date yet. This one called Omnium Gatherum. Presumably no relation to the band of the same name. And on top of all this, literally this morning as I was in the middle of taking notes for this, they even dropped a new EP. Specifically a collaboration with another experimental Australian band called Tropical Fuckstorm. That's the name of the band, not the EP. But yes, it never ends. King Gizzard shall reign supreme. But anyway, let's actually get into the song itself, which is called The Dripping Tap, clocking in at 18 minutes and 18 seconds. Apparently, all of this material from, like, you know, that more recent album to that new EP to even this song. Apparently all of these stemmed out from like some live recordings and jam sessions around the time of their album Fishing for Fishies or something. Don't ask. I was running down the Wikipedia rabbit hole. I did not realize King Gizzard had deep lore. But anyway, as for the song we get here, it's basically this extremely overlong, like energetic, psychedelic, rock improvisational jam thing, of the kind that probably wouldn't be out of place on an Iron Butterfly record. The early days, anyway. And, yeah, you're just kind of constantly hear, like, this very, you know, driving tempo with the drums with lots of thumping kicks and just... You know, I'd like to point out there's at least one or two pauses in this song, which I'm assuming were just to give the drummer a break. Because, seriously, that dude's hitting the kick something fierce here. And, of course, you have all the guitars and synths blaring out these walls of psychedelic sound, just tons of... You know, jammy improvisational soloing, the occasional break where there's something vaguely resembling a riff so that Stu McKenzie can blurt out some random lyrics here and there that are just, you know, Stu McKenzie being weird and stuff. And yeah, it's 18 minutes and 18 seconds of King Gizzard jamming out. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure what you expect at this point. It's King Gizzard. Expect nothing, but, you know, I was going somewhere with this. I'm not as good as improvisation here, is what I'm saying.
Well, as per usual, I continue to feel very confused as to what this band actually is, but I'll rarely ever say no to 18 minutes of 70s-style jam rock. It was good. It was good.
And I believe that might be the first relatively positive thing Alex has said about the band in a while, if ever. I'd have to go back and check the archives. But anyway, moving on. So, this past weekend was, of course, South by Southwest, which, as always, has a ton of, you know, media events and stuff. One of the more notable ones was, of course, a screening of the film Everything Everywhere All at Once. Of course, the reviews trending out from it seem pretty positive so far, which is a good note considering the film comes out the 25th this month, I believe.
Yay.
And we, of course, previously mentioned the film here because the score was being composed by this electronic band called Sun Lux. It was going to have, you know, a bunch of guest appearances from, like, you know, Andre 3000 playing the flute and all that kind of stuff. And so we actually have one of the tracks here from the soundtrack called This Is a Life, which is the collaboration between Sun Lux, Mitski, and David Byrne of the Talking Heads. And, I mean, it kind of sounds like what you would expect those two, you know, helping orchestrate a weird out there sci-fi movie. I mean, it's a pretty low-key electronic piece with the occasional swell of, you know, big band string orchestration with Mitski and David Byrne singing the way that they do. It, you know, it just kind of sounds like your typical film soundtrack piece, but they do sound pretty good singing on it, if nothing else.
Yeah, I gotta say, the voices fit really well here. Like, I know it's pretty typical of what I expect from Mitski and maybe from David Byrne, but it really does sound good here, especially with the voice intertwined with each other on the chorus. But yeah, this is a pretty good sort of soundtrack cut, and also the visual of this thing. And yeah, I mean, yes, that is a bagel, a poppy seed bagel.
Man, I could go for a bagel right now. Maybe I should grab one for breakfast on the way to school tomorrow. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So a while back, we talked about some new material coming out of the camp of Florence and the Machine, mentioning that it was probably about, you know, due for them to put out a new album. And we actually got an announcement for that new album. The newest project from the band, called Dance Fever, is coming out May 13th. Oh shit, that would be Friday the 13th.
Oh.
I'm sure that's not ominous in any way. But, yeah, we have the newest single from the group, and I think, at least based on what I was reading on, you know, Stereo Gum's news archives, I think they actually put out two in the past week. But I just chose the one recent one here, because that made the most sense. It's called My Love, and, well, it definitely has a bit more energy and tempo to it than the previous single we talked about. There's this low kind of string synth sort of thing, I'm not sure which it is, section that kind of underscores Florence, you know, very, very powerful vocal performance as the music does eventually, like, swell a bit over time. Like I said, it's definitely more, the tempo has a bit more energy to it than the last song we heard. Of course, the lyrics are kind of in the same camp, you know, the topic of love and romance, couched in the kind of dramatic, poetic language that you would expect from her at this point, and yeah, it sounds solid enough.
Yeah, like, everything you said, yeah, like, I So this was one of the last cuts. This is a bit more, you know, energetic. I will say this reminds me of, I don't know, like a something you will hear in the interest of a, I don't know, of some big epic movie. Because it's something incredible music to some movie, which, well, it ain't part of a soundtrack. It sounds like it would be, but that's what I got from the feel of this, and like I said, it's decent. I like this a bit more. I'll just say when I play it every time, it's a good listen.
Cool. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So, while Dua Lipa is in the middle of a lot of unfortunate legal BS, I think still at least, I don't think she's fully resolved it, though. I heard there was some other music legal copyright BS thing going on, but I'm not sure if that was with Dua Lipa or not. And either way, this whole thing is stupid, because at the end of the day, you're basically trying to say that you are able to copyright just basic fundamental concepts of music theory and songwriting, which basically makes you sound like the fine bros of the music industry.
Oh, how fun.
Oh boy.
Don't think we've ever forgotten about that.
We know. We watch anyway, you.
In the meantime, she has released a brand new song this past week in collaboration with none other than Megan Thee Stallion, who I'm sure is probably in a very good mood right now, considering that Black Clover has officially now been in syndication for 7 years, and that the movie has gotten a release date for 2023. You know, funnily enough, I still haven't seen her Hot Ones interview yet. I got a lot of that channel I need to catch up on, but
yes, same
I'm
here.
Sure that... I'm sure that rant will probably be amusing if I'm not a Black Clover stan myself. Anyway, the song here is called Sweetest Pie, and, well, I mean, it's a song with Megan Thee Stallion on it that has pie in the title. What do you think it means? But, yeah, it definitely just sounds like the two of them, you know, playing off each other as they do. You know, they're both obviously singing about very much wanting to get laid and, you know, all that fun stuff. Dua Lipa tries to play things a bit more poetic and pop-like, while Megan Thee Stallion is obviously on her raunchy hot girl shit, you know, as blunt as it is, and, you know, they definitely sound, you know, as they typically do on their songs, which is, say, pretty damn good. This music video is fucking weird, though, especially that one scene, that one fucking scene where Megan Thee Stallion shoots middle fingers out of her eye sockets, which just, you know, I'm just gonna say this, I know she's a Black Clover stan. I didn't realize she was also into Hell's Paradise Jigokuraku. That's a pretty good manga, by the way. I'm still in the middle of reading it. You should all read it. It's great.
Yeah, it ain't the first time that they had a video out that's looked all weird as fuck. I think she had one like way back that I remember, but I remember her having like this. But yeah, this video was fucking weird. From all the visuals to the fact that this pie come out of her face, or this lots of pie, also pie, and I don't know Spider Dua Lipa, or I don't know the fuck, there's some weird Alice Wonderland looking shit. Like, yeah, there is that. It's like wondering, am I high? Not even smoke weed,
maybe,
and I think I'm high.
Maybe not. I'm not sure what is and is not high anymore. Anyway, time to move out of the realm of contemporary pop and rap to good old prog rock and metal. Alex, you have the floor.
Ah, fantastic. So, yes, we are back in the realm of Porcupine Tree, as they have announced tour dates on this side of the globe, none of which are happening anywhere near where I live, unless I want to drive 4 hours to Washington, which I kind of don't want to do. We have another track of this upcoming new album of theirs, which is only 3 months away. It's called Of the New Day. And this one is it's a bit more laid back and melodic, but still carrying a bit of familiar textures to it. The heavier bits remind me of some tracks off of The Incident, while the quieter verses and build-up feel like a blend of Deadwing and Lightbulb Sun era Porcupine Tree and Hand Cannot Erase, complete with some fine, fine drum work from Gavin Harrison sprinkled all throughout. It's a good companion piece to the first track we've heard from the album. It's not going to blow your mind, but not every track has to blow your mind.
This is technically true. It definitely has, like, a solid enough balance, you know, most of the verses being very, like, acoustic melodic prog, and then the choruses and stuff have, like, kind of like that dissonant twang and overdrive that my first instinct is to say is more 90s alt-rock and grunge than anything else. Sounds pretty good, though. I dig it. So yeah, keep an eye out for a Closure continuation out on June 24th.
3 months away.
But in the meantime, we have one last song here to talk about, and it is another pretty big one in the grand scheme of things. So it's been about 3 years or so since we had the big comeback from everyone's favorite angry, tongue-in-cheek, aggressively homoerotic industrial German boys in Rammstein with their untitled album. And now, of course, Rammstein, after a tease or two here and there, is back with some brand new material. So, we of course have the first new Rammstein album in a few years called Zeit, coming out April 29th. And we of course have the title track here to coincide with the big announcement. As for how the song actually plays out, well, it starts off with this very solemn piano melody that builds through about the first minute and a half of the song. Of course, Till Lindemann singing over top, and I did not jot down what these lyrics are supposed to mean, if anything at all, because obviously I do not speak German. And then at about that point, at about, you know, a minute and a half in, you start getting this kind of buzzy guitar lick in the song, as well as this four on the floor kick, and that goes on for another minute or so before the full band proper enters, with, you know, that four on the floor rhythm continuing as the guitars chug in rhythm with the drums before moving on to a buzzy tremolo, just kind of vamping on those verses and choruses before the song eventually closes out with, you know, kind of a synth imitating the rhythm and everything. It's not quite the kind of energetic pulse pounding affair you'd expect from, I guess, what would be considered more typical Rammstein territory. This is more, you know, grandiose sounding and melodramatic, which, I mean, ultimately depends on which side you prefer. I mean, it's not bad for what it is, but I think as far as the first single, I think people would probably expect something with a little bit more oomph to it. You know what I mean? It's not bad, though.
So, yeah, I have no idea what this song is about. And given the reception, neither does anyone else, apparently. This just feels like one of those songs that wants to have a message to it, but fuck if I know what that message is. Something about death and war and birth and fuck, I don't know. This is a weird song, even for Rammstein standards. Though it does have the usual Not Safe for Work music video attached to it, which, yikes.
Yeah.
It did be like that sometimes. You know.
But, yeah, so that basically about covers the new song discussion. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have the news, so stay tuned. And we're back. Now, while I said we didn't recycle anything for the new song discussions, there is one news topic I had to carry over from the first attempt at recording this episode last week because it was just important enough, yeah, as well as just frustrating enough.
Yeah.
And of course, it comes to us courtesy of one of our favorite facets of the modern media landscape, corporate consolidation. Pretty much just about in the same week that we learned that Funimation was moving the vast majority of their streaming library to Crunchyroll, among various other business dealings, yeah, we of course had this announcement.
This shit.
Of all the goddamn things, like, there's mergers that make sense, and then there's this. So, Bandcamp, still one of the greatest forces for good in the modern music distribution game.
You're here.
recently announced that they got acquired by a big name corporate entity. And of all the friggin' companies it could be, like, I don't know, was it Apple Music? No.
Okay.
Was it Spotify?
Oh, no. God, no.
Was it Napster? No. No, the company that acquired Bandcamp is none other than Epic Games. Which, as you all know, they do stuff like the Unreal Engine, which of course means they do like the Unreal video game series. They're also responsible for Fortnite, a.k.a. that thing that your annoying little cousin is always doing dances from at Thanksgiving reunions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And who the fuck knows what else at this point?
Worth noting that Epic Games is 40% minority owned by Tencent.
Yeah, that company.
Yeah, them guys.
That definitely doesn't create problems. But, yeah, as soon as this statement reached the internet, everyone just collectively groaned.
Like, what the fuck?
Because we all know this, it's just going to, not be great. So, let's see. Let's, scan this one part of, we're not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to scan this particular paragraph that stands out here from, the blog post, courtesy of Ethan Diamond, the Bandcamp co-founder and CEO. Bandcamp will keep operating as a standalone marketplace and music community, and I will continue to lead our team. The products and services you depend on aren't going anywhere. We'll continue to build Bandcamp around our artist-first revenue model, where artists net an average of 82% of every sale. You'll still have the same control over how you offer your music. Bandcamp Fridays will continue as planned, and The Daily will keep highlighting the diverse, amazing music on the site. However, behind the scenes, we're working with Epic to expand internationally and push development forward across Bandcamp for bases like our album pages, mobile apps, and merch tools, payment system, and search for discovery features, to newer initiatives like our vinyl pressing and live streaming services. Yeah, this just sounds like corporate speak for don't worry, everything will be fine, asterisk for now.
Yeah, and I'll pose this question one more time. Why does Tim Sweeney need to own Bandcamp?
I don't know. Maybe his kids thought he was super lame or something, and this would up his credibility in their eyes.
Fuck his kids!
But yeah, you just know that this is just corporate speak. Like, they're saying everything will be fine now, but then they start slowly but surely introducing some bullshit and ruining a perfectly good thing.
And yeah, it's so later you'll turn to Epic Games Music Store or some bullshit like that.
Or integration into their various holdings and platforms and products, which I'm pretty sure a large majority of musicians and bands on Bandcamp don't want.
They don't want that shit.
No, not at all. And, you know, that would be just the oh-so-perfect thing to do when we're in the middle of a particularly notable music in the frequently ongoing discourse about artists' rights and, you know, financial compensation and shit, especially following everything that happened after Neil Young beefing with Spotify.
Yeah.
And how that opened up larger discussions about musical compensation and access to their materials.
Yeah. There's one line in here that I just can't help but roll my eyes at. It's at the very, very top of the statement, where Epic Games is called Champions for a Fair and Open Internet. Compared to who and what?
Is any part of the internet really fair and open anymore?
Not really.
I mean, look,
the only reason why I have such a problem with not so much Epic Games, but in particular Tim Sweeney, this guy does not understand terms and services. If you're going to play ball with Apple, you got to play by their rules. Nobody likes it, but if you want to make that money, you got to do it.
The alternative is having Tim Cook come over to your house and run a steamroller over your balls. Metaphorically speaking. I hope metaphorically, at least.
I hope so.
Yeah, let's just keep it at that.
So yeah, we just have to sit here now and think about how this is all going to go down the shitter in the next few months. The ultimate question is, how long until NFTs?
That's a very real possibility.
In more ways later. Than one, but we'll get
more
to that.
More of that in a moment.
But first, we have to veer back to a different kind of tragedy. Of course, many remember that several months back, the most recent iteration of the Astroworld Festival, hosted by Travis Scott, there was a colossal tragedy that resulted in the loss of lives of, I'm pretty sure, at least 11 people last I checked, including a couple of children.
Yeah.
And there was tons of controversy surrounding that, class action lawsuits out the ass, extremely questionable partnerships with certain, mental health outlets online, the works. So, if you thought it couldn't possibly get any more questionable, well, apparently Travis Scott has recently announced a new initiative called Project Heal, that of course being H-E-A-L, billed as a quote, multi-tier, long-term series of community-focused philanthropy and investment efforts. Apparently, it breaks down into four different categories. A Wayman Webster HBCU Scholarship Fund, that being historically black college and universities. An expansion of the Cactus Youth Design Center, free mental health resources. And a U.S. Conference of Mayors Task Force of Event Safety. It's backed by a multi-million funding commitment from Scott, with a portion of proceeds from his upcoming product launches also going towards the initiative. Okay, so him trying to launch this whole initiative to sort of, you know, compensate for his role in the tragedy, as it were, and, I mean, in theory, it's a nice thought and all, but, I don't know, like, that's how these kind of things always work. Like, it always feels like there's some kind of PR spin happening somewhere, whether it's obvious or it's not.
Yeah, it's like, we know your heart, maybe your heart is in the right place, or maybe you have good intentions, but are you really doing this with the goodness of your heart, or are you doing this because you want them on your ass? Because we've been on your ass a lot. Considering you lost a lot of, you lost a lot of deals. Like, a lot of deals.
Yeah, this really does feel like a motive to make things basically as a make good for the future. Not so much what happened at the incident where, again, 11 people died!
Including children!
And there are still lawsuits going on. And at least one congressional investigation going on.
Yeah.
That's not going to go away because we have all this now. That's not going to bring back the 11 people who died.
Like, am I forgiven? Like, no, nigga, you're not. Forget about this. Yeah, you got a whole lot to do more than just doing this and doing that. You got a whole lot of shit to do before you end up doing anything else. Like, before you do any other movie, before you do any other thing, before you do anything, you have to basically atone for your sins, whatever the fuck I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Again, there's probably something somewhere, some fine print that, kind of creates problems if you look really deeply into it. But now we move on from that tragedy to a different kind of tragedy. So, there's an expression, one that has recently probably entered back into the public consciousness thanks to Batman being a relevant subject in theaters. I believe the expression goes, you either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself order a Batman calzone from Little Caesars. I think. It's been a while since I've seen that Batman trilogy, but I'm pretty sure that's how it goes. So, what exactly do we mean by all this? Well, I want to take you back to the halcyon days of the late 90s and the early 2000s, early to mid 2000s, where that was very much arguably the golden age of media piracy in all its forms.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you probably remember, like, the big ones. Of course, we touched on Napster. We referenced them earlier. And, of course, you were either on the teams of, like, Kazaa, Centurion, or even LimeWire.
Oh,
hey, that was me.
I remember those days.
I actually pulled up, just a brief anecdote, so I pulled up a box of CDRs that I've had laying around for, like, the last 15 years. One of them has a WMV file of the South Park movie in glorious 160p resolution. It's 75 megabytes.
Oh, wow.
This is the good old days.
It's your phone. They're putting your phone, and I mean, like, your flip phone or some shit if they play video.
Yeah.
Well, damn.
Yeah, it was a different time back then. But now... So, yeah, LimeWire has kind of been defunct for a while. They were, you know, a great place for downloading all kinds of random bullshit. But recently, these two Australian entrepreneurs... let me see their names here. Julian and Paul Zayetmeyer, however. You know, they're brothers, of course. They recently spent the last couple of years acquiring the LimeWire brand, and they're going to relaunch it in May. Now, just for context, it's been down for at least about 12 years or so. You know, it shut down at the end of 2010. And they're going to turn it into, get ready for it, an NFT marketplace.
Oh,
and the
sake.
Timing of it could not be better, because that whole quote unquote ecosystem is downward slope right now.
It's having a moment, a downward spiral, if you will, which I hope this idea has a downward spiral so we can go back to the glory days of using peer-to-peer software to download the downward spiral.
They're hoping that this
is, of course, catering to nostalgia. The brothers say that they're hoping, you know, in their own words, it's a very iconic name. Even if you look on Twitter today, there's hundreds of people still being nostalgic about the name. Everybody connects it with music, and we're launching initially a very music-focused marketplace, so the brand was really the perfect fit for that with its legacy. After about 12 years of the platform being down, all the controversy that might have been in the past with the music industry has turned into nostalgia. So, yeah, according to them, it's basically got to become a hub for buying and selling music NFTs, though users will have the option to purchase them with either US dollars or cryptocurrency. Oh, yeah, gee, I wonder why the US dollars is an option. Marks. Not the mark here, but other kinds of marks. The two CEOs even said that 10, quote, really big mainstream artists have agreed to offer up exclusive NFTs in the LimeWire marketplace. And this is just a parenthetical note here on the piece. Potentially in the mix are Wu-Tang Clan and Her, who are members of their management teams on the LimeWire advisory board. This is, of course, the worst thing to happen to the Wu-Tang Clan brand since Martin Shkreli.
Okay, and I know people are getting, you know, they're getting nostalgic for the, you know, for the days of LimeWire Gazaa, and I remember those days, too. I really fond of those days. Like, I remember like, always such to download, like, waiting, you know, either minutes or hours. But then I remember computers crashing every time that shit happens. Loads of viruses we downloaded in that system. And I think to myself, I wonder what's worse to happen to the LimeWire, downloading viruses or getting an NFT?
I think I'll take the viruses.
And just as a reminder, back in those days, you didn't have to actually pay money to download music off of that because it was all free and very illegal. Whereas with this,
yeah, very
dubious legality with real money. Ugh.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm pretty sure the ability to pay with real money is, again, just to have the marks input their, you know, cash into the ecosystem there. Because that's the only thing that kind of gives this crypto bullshit any value.
Mm.
Just wait for the rug pull.
Well, considering where everything's going right now, which is interest fading real fast, yeah, it'll probably get pulled pretty quick.
So we're going to keep an eye out in May and see just how the fuck this even fucking works. Like, okay, so you say you have 10 high-profile artists contributing NFTs. So at the very least, we know that Wu-Tang Clan and her are possibilities. I also vaguely remember Kyle launching a music project as an NFT.
Oh yeah, that thing happened.
2 Chainz is not outside the realm of possibility. Remember, he was involved to some extent, at least, in that bullshit NFT animated project, The Red Ape Family. You know, it's kind of amazing. Flash Animation has been able to do a lot of great things. Just look at Foster's Home or even friggin' My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. And then that horrific abomination comes along, looking worse than fucking Ultimate Showdown of Ultimate Destiny. At least that actually had a creative concept to it and a catchy song. The fuck?
Bottom line, all this is really stupid. Just go away. All you, go away.
And I will drink to that. Not alcohol, because that requires money, but water, I guess.
I was into that.
It's vodka.
I was into that too. Maybe the water, or alcohol, or Doritos.
Yo, I should also get some Doritos. But anyway, yeah, so that does it for all that tragic news discussion. Now let's move on to the last little bit here. That is, of course, the new album releases for the week of March 18th, 2022. Starting at the top, we have, unfortunately, the new comeback album from Stabbing Westward with Chasing Ghosts. There's a new project from Cypress Hill called Back in Black.
Oh, yeah.
We of course, have the new album from pop singer Charlie XCX with Crash.
Mm-hmm.
And the newest album from Rosalia with Motomami.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, now it is time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, where I do things and talk about things. Because a survey says, one more for the good guys. See you down the road, Razor.
Cool, cool. And Mark, what about you?
Let's see, Twitter, social media, I do stuff. MindHowardNetworks.com, I do stuff. There you go.
All right, cool. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Rob Barracuda. Email me at roberts@sewerresolution.com for, you know, questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Podcasts. Yada, yada, yada. You know where to find us. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SurrealRezo, like us on Facebook, visit the website SurrealResolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, and all that good stuff. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat so you can, you know, gush out about the latest announcements from Discotech Day. Yeah, yeah, all of that good stuff.
Yay.
Well, that'll about do it for this week. We'll, of course, be back next week with more of the weekly business, hopefully consistently. So, yeah, until next time, insert closing segue here.